Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back after a phenomenal UFC event this past weekend. I kid you not, it was an Apex event. That's right, it was an Apex event, minimal fans, maybe 50, and it was the best fight night of the entire year. I kid you not, the entire year. We're going to be recapping all the action that went down. It was absolutely electric and pretty much talking about what's next for all the fighters. Excited to do that. Also on today's episode, you're going to be getting a little preview of Dana White's Contender Series Season 8, Episode 3. We're finally back with our Dana White's Contender Series predictions. Also going to be recapping some of my drafts I've done for fantasy football, talking about my experience at the State Fair, some new UFC news, all sorts of fun stuff on today's episode. And if you haven't already, make sure to check out Episode 114, where we interview my most viewed guest episode of all time with Lexi Morley. She's back. It is an absolutely amazing episode. We had so much fun recording it. I encourage you all to check it out on all streaming platforms. But as for today's episode, let's get right on into it because, I mean, what else are we going to do? We have so much things to talk about on today's episode of the Surprise Jab Podcast. And kicking things off, it was actually my first day of classes of my senior year. That's right, it is my senior year of college here at Minnesota State Mankato. And luckily for me, I had class today with my boy Garrett. It was so much fun. No, it wasn't. It was a very boring class. It's marketing research and analytics. But the professor had a terrible rate, my professor rating. It was like 2.1. And actually meeting him today, he seemed like so nice. He seemed like just a kind old man, typical run-of-the-mill professor. So I was a little confused why he had so many bad ratings. I guess we'll see how the semester continues to wind down. But as for right now, I mean, Mr. Hall seems like a good professor. Pretty much just went through everyone in the class, had them talk about themselves. I shared that I have a podcast. That's right, we plugged the podcast in class, and that I'm president of the marketing club. So you already know, people were jealous that I'm freaking awesome. I don't mean that. I am not egotistical. And it was pretty steamy out today, pretty hot, very humid in Mankato, Minnesota. It's 92 degrees out. I actually have another fantasy football draft tonight, which we'll be recapping that on Thursday's episode, if I'm correctly thinking of when I'm dropping these episodes. Other than that, not too much. Excited for the year. Been reaching out to some people I haven't seen in a while. I'm excited. It's going to be an amazing senior year. I already know for a fact I'm going to make my final 8 to 7 months at college the most memorable time of my entire adult life, if I am an adult yet. So, but anyways, that's not usually how we started episodes. We just kind of want to throw that little blip in there, because how we usually start our episodes is with new UFC news, and we usually talk about new fights that have been made official. But since we last spoke last week, no fights have been announced. I kid you not, there have been no new fights made. You may be seeing that Michelle Pereira versus Anthony Hernandez is the new main event for UFC Vegas 98 or 99. We already knew about that going down in October, but as for some rumors floating around the rumor mill, first off, Ian Topura recently said that his fight with Blessed MMA, of course, Max Holloway, was originally supposed to happen at the Sphere at UFC 306, then it got moved to the UFC 307 in Utah, and then it got moved one final time to UFC 308 in Abu Dhabi. I'm just very happy that that fight is currently booked for October 20, oh gosh, using my memory, 6th, the end of October, I believe it is. I really hope we actually get that fight, and everyone's sleeping on Ian Topura. Let me tell you right now, I'm riding with him. Okay, I'm sorry, Max. I'm sorry. I've actually picked against Max Holloway in just about every fight he's been in. It's actually pretty crazy. I bet against Max Holloway all the time. Maybe he'll pull this out, but I honestly think El Matador, Ian Topura, is an absolute savage. So, happy that fight's going down. UFC 308, end of October. A call-out was actually made by the winner of this past weekend's event to Driscus Duplessis, courtesy of Caio Barallo. He says he deserves a title shot next, which I find very fascinating. Will he get that? I don't know. You'll have to stay tuned for the end of today's episode. Someone else looking to get a fight, make a return, of course, Beneil Dariush. Beneil Dariush, of course, a men's lightweight, been in the division for quite some time now, currently ranked number 7, says he wants to return to UFC 309 at Madison Square Garden. He's been off 11 months, most recently I mean, actually, when did he last fight? He fought in December. Yeah, it'd be about almost a year since he last fought. And it was, of course, a loss to Arman Tsarukyan. But mind you, his last two losses are to the number one, number two guys in the division. If I'm actually matchmaking him, maybe the number 10-ranked Rafael Fiziev, winner of Benoit Saint-Denis and Namwaikano, Jalen Turner. I don't really know, but I would like to see Benil Dariush back in action. He's a fun guy. He's a really good man, good Christian man. Finally, this is all the news that I could find. Most recently, the number one contender in the men's lightweight division, Arman Tsarukyan, says he is in talks with the UFC about the Islam Makhachev title fight rematch to happen in December at UFC 310. If Islam cannot make the December return, he plans the fight for the interim title. This is very interesting if they end up doing an interim title. Now, as we look at the rankings, there are a couple individuals who he could potentially fight. First off, Dan Hooker, most recently won. He's coming in with some momentum, and that would be a fun fight. Number two, Charles Oliveira, the rematch. It was a split decision at UFC 300. I would not be surprised if they want to run this one back to make sure he is officially ready for Islam Makhachev. Another name, Justin Gaethje. I mean, he was most recently brutally knocked out. I don't really give him much of a chance, but they could go his way. And finally, either Dustin Poirier or Michael Chandler. At this point, they'll just be trying to get a fight for both of those guys. Truly, if you ask me, it should be Charles Oliveira. It was a split decision last time. I think having this five rounds for an interim belt would pretty much solidify who is better between them both. And as much as Arman Tsarukyan deserves it, I know he just doesn't want to sit around and wait because that does not play to his benefit. We'll see what happens. I hope, hopefully, that fight goes down in December. We will have to see, though. You never know nowadays with these guys. They always be taking forever. And I'll tell you what else is taking forever, and that is the Lions at the Minnesota State Fair. That is right, the Minnesota State Fair, the biggest state fair in the country, according to me, who is from Minnesota. I recently went this past weekend with my wonderful girlfriend, Lexi. Make sure to listen to episode 114 and episode 12. She's been on the podcast twice. And we had an amazing time. I had so much food. I had so much good drinks, beverages, and we were there almost 11 hours. Oh my goodness, half of my day was dedicated to the state fair. I easily spent $100, but I had a good time. I had some fries. They were pretty run-of-the-mill. I did have some jalapeno cheese curds, which, as delicious as they were, the ones I've had at Huntington Bank Stadium, home of the Minnesota Gophers, where they play football, I personally thought those were better, but nonetheless, I'm not trying to complain. Also, I had a slice of pizza from Green Mill. I knew it was going to be good. You know, I've had it before. Ice cream cone, waffle cone was super good. Then, my good buddy Jaden, actually all my buddies down here, we've actually had Jaden on the podcast twice before. He actually owns, or his dad owns, the pickle stand. There's a pickle stand at the Minnesota State Fair, which does incredible business. And he works there, of course, and I finally ended up trying the pickles there. All right, I'm not a huge pickle person. Big staple in Minnesota. I finally got around to trying it. I had the Cajun pickles, and they were delicious. Cajun pickles were absolutely delicious. My stomach did not like them. My stomach was not feeling them Cajun pickles, if I'm being honest. Now, my taste buds absolutely loving it. I love spice. I love heat. I love feeling it. My tummy does not agree. My tummy does not agree with my mind, or whatever you want to call it. But I don't know. Food-wise, that was pretty good. I also had a pina colada, which was, I mean, just pretty average. I've had better pina coladas. I did have a Leinenkugel summer shandy, which was nice and cold. It was so tasty. And then, okay, I swear I have no problems, but I had four Grain Belt Blue drinks topped with sangria slushy. The most delicious thing I've ever had at the state fair. It is so good. I barely even got a, I think I maybe got a buzz at like 12 or 1 at the state fair. But other than that, nowhere near intoxicated at all. It was a very good day. A lot of walking. Actually, that reminds me, I was going to check what my steps were. Live here on the podcast, we're going to be checking what my steps were for the Minnesota State Fair. That would have been 2 days ago, if I'm not mistaken. Well, that's average. We want to go today. Saturday, oh my gosh, August 20th, 23rd, 24th, 24,000 steps. I took 24,000 steps. Holy cow. I mean, absolutely amazing time at the state fair. Tons of cool, I don't even know if you want to call it, buildings to go into. There's a lot of political stuff, you know, with Tim Walz, Donald Trump, Kamala Harris. I try and stay away from that personally. They do have this cool fish pond where they have all the fish in Minnesota and they put in this big pond. I feel bad for the fish, but it looks super cool. We actually went on the Skyline ride, which is kind of like a ski lift right across the whole park. that was kind of intimidating. It was shaking at some points, and I'm not too big of a fan of heights. But overall, the Minnesota State Fair, it gets an 8.2 out of 10 for me. I had a very good day, and it was just a great time with the girlfriend. And all the food, all the drinks, was it worth the money? I think so. At the time, I enjoyed everything I ate, all the places I went. My nose did not like the hay, but other than that, Minnesota State Fair, an amazing, amazing time. Also, what was an amazing time have been my fantasy football drafts. All right, I am in so many leagues this year. I believe I'm in five. I think I'm in five leagues. I have to, honestly, I have to double check, but I think I'm in five leagues. We've already recapped, what was it, one of my drafts, maybe two, but we have two more to recap today. So I figured I'd talk about some of the players I took, some of my reasoning behind it. First off, my random league. I put on a random league. I'm the commissioner every year. Exciting stuff. And this year, I ended up with the fifth pick. All right, fifth pick, my number one pick, or I guess round one pick, I should say, CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb fell to me at the number five position, and I was being clowned for it. Honestly, I was being clowned for it, all right? But mind you, my good boy Landon, I love Landon so much. One of my best friends, he took Jordan Love with the number three pick. He took Jordan Love with the number three pick. No words. Absolutely no words. But you know what? In fantasy football, I want you to take the players you want to have, which is why I'm happy for him. Elsewhere, Amon-Ra St. Brown fell to number nine, which I find pretty crazy. A.J. Brown and Puka Nacua ended up on the same team as someone I know. Round number two, Jalen Hurts went at the 14th pick. I snagged Josh Allen at the 16th. I know I reach, but I have a different quarterback in every single one of my leagues. I think I have CJ Stroud, Jalen Hurts. I now have Josh Allen. I'm planning to take two different ones just because I like mixing it up. I like mixing it up, and sure, I guess it kind of sucks when you have to face people when you have them, but at the same time, it kind of makes it fun, because it's like, oh, I just got scored out of this league, but I scored on someone in the other league. Heading into round number three, I snagged Travis Etienne Jr. I mean, look, he was the number three running back last year, and I know you can't really look at last year's past stats, but I just feel this Jaguars team should be progressing, and Travis Etienne Jr., there's no reason he should deprogress in his stats. I just do not see that. Round four, I snag Rashad White. I have Rashad White in might be all three of my leagues. He just keeps falling to me. He was the number four running back last year, and this Buccaneers team is not really different. If anything, they slightly improved. That's just about it, okay? And Rashad White, a great running back. I'm happy with him. I don't care if other people don't agree, but I like Rashad White. Big fan of him. Round number five for this 10-man league, I snagged Devontae Smith. Fan of Devontae Smith. I mean, when A.J. Brown's out, when A.J. Brown's off, Devontae Smith is on. Okay, 50% of the targets go to the two wide receivers when Jalen Hurts is throwing. So Devontae Smith, I'm happy with him, and he's a guy I want to root for. Like I'm talking, even if I'm playing him in fantasy, I'm rooting for him as a player, so it's good to at least have him in one of my leagues as my starter. Round number six, I snagged Dalton Kincaid. You know, I've been looking to get different tight ends in all my leagues, and I'm a big Dalton Kincaid guy. I absolutely love him. You know, he's taking over for Dawson Knox, and with this very young, very tested receiving core for the Bills and Josh Allen, Dalton Kincaid been there last year, was there last year. Allen knows him, and Allen, you know, when he gets down to end zone, loves his tight ends. Love Dalton Kincaid. Round number seven, I end up going with T. Higgins, and it's pretty much just the reason, you know, I'm in other serious leagues. I'm in a league where 16 people, $30 each. Another league we're going to talk about in a second, 10 people, $50 each. This one, no money's on the line. Maybe I'll do it with three of the other people in my league for $25, but I got T. Higgins. You know, I want to see the T. Higgins that is legendary, okay? Maybe he'll get traded. Maybe he'll end up on a team where he is wide receiver one. But as for now, you know, T. Higgins, I'm going to root for him. Maybe he'll start my flex. We'll have to see. Moving into round number eight, I snagged Tony Pollard. You know, it was either Tony Pollard or Tajay Spears, and I want to give Tony Pollard one more shot. Remember when he was that great backup? Ezekiel Elliott went out. He came in and was absolutely amazing. Then he started all last year and just fell off. You know, him and Tajay Spears are going to be splitting the touches down in Tennessee. I'm excited to see what he produces. And yeah, you know, I could have taken other players, but I really want to just have this guy, and he goes off, and I go, yes, I gave him a shot. Now, number nine, snag Jordan Addison. All right, he's my boy. You know, I understand the Vikings quarterback situation is atrocious, but I would rather pick players that I want to root for, and no matter what situation the Vikings are in, I'm never going to be rooting against them. Round number 10, I snagged Brandon Aubrey. I just want him. He was the number one kicker last year. He had more points than a lot of other players in their top 10 for positions, and there's just no way he deprogresses. So Brandon Aubrey with the Cowboys, love it. Round number 11, same thing for me. I got the number one defense from last year, the Cowboys defense. All right, and people are saying they're going to deprogress. I don't care. I wanted them in at least one league for when they drop 30 points. I can say, haha, I have them. It's good to have you. Round number 12 is where things start to get kind of, you know, your lesser players. If I grab Tyler Lockett, I mean, legendary bench player Tyler Lockett. And, you know, you got Jackson Smith and Jigba. You got DK Metcalf. You also got Tyler Lockett, legendary veteran. Round number 13 came around. I decided to snag Brock Purdy as my backup quarterback. A little Josh Allen, Brock Purdy. I mean, Brock Purdy was in the top 10. He might have been number 6, actually, for quarterbacks last year for points. Dude, I just like Brock Purdy. People hate on Brock Purdy for his abilities, and I just do not understand it. Love me some Brock Purdy. Round number 14, went and snagged Mike Williams of the Jets. Do you know how dirty Mike Williams could be with Aaron Rodgers? The possibilities are there. He was so good with Justin Herbert, just kept getting injured, and now he's with Aaron Rodgers, and who knows, he could be earning that flex spot by week 2 or 3. Round number 15, second to last, I believe, went and got Antonio Gibson. You never know what you're going to get with the Patriots. And Antonio Gibson, I just liked him from his Redskin Commanders days. And with Ramondre Stevenson, him and Antonio can maybe split touches. We have no idea what to expect for the Patriots. The Patriots team is completely different. Same thing for Antonio Gibson, completely different scheme. And the final pick I snagged was Romeo Doubs of the Green Bay Packers. If you can't beat him, join him. Figured I'd snag one of them Packer players. Well, because why not? So yes, my official team is Josh Allen starting QB, Travis Etienne, Rashad White starting running backs, CD Lamb, Devontae Smith starting wide receivers, Dalton Kincaid in my tight end spot. You know, we got T. Higgins in the flex. He'll probably start week 1 against the Patriots. I could also throw in Tony Pollard, Jordan Addison, Mike Williams. We'll have to see. Then we got Cowboys D and Brandon Aubrey. You know, I'm pretty content with that team. I'm pretty happy with that team. You know, I'll be going up against my buddy Brody, who I met in college. You know, he's got CJ Stroud, Christian McCaffrey, Jahmyr Gibbs, Chris Olave, DK Metcalf, Mark Andrews, Malik Nabers, Pittsburgh D, and Matt Gay as the kicker. Very solid team from the number one spot position. But hey, never know what's going to happen. Never know. So that was my 10-man league I was in just for fun, but I'm also in another 10-man league with my cousin and his friends, and this one, let me tell you guys, this one is for $500 and a trophy. Here's what my team is looking like. It's on the NFL Fantasy app, which I have no idea how to work this app. I'm going to be honest, I have no idea how to even change out my players. I should really learn that right now, but so I'm not really going to be able to go through the draft itself, but here's my official team. First off, QB CJ Stroud. Okay, CJ Stroud snuck into the top 10 for fantasy QBs as a rookie. His receiving core now has Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins. All right, you got Dalton Schultz. You got Tank Dell. It is overpowered. You even got Joe Mixon with some dump-off passes. CJ Stroud is an animal. I'm so excited to see him this year. Starting running back, Travis Etienne. Dude, he keeps falling to me, and I'm going to keep riding with him. Absolutely love him. Running back, Kenneth Walker. Look, Kenneth Walker had some amazing games last year. Seahawks, you know, it's either going to be him or Zach Charbonnet, and I'm going to ride with a healthy Kenneth Walker Jr. My wide receivers, Deebo Samuel and Justin Jefferson. I watch receiver. Okay, I've been begging to snag these guys. I'm going to get Amon-Ra St. Brown in my final two drafts. I'm going to take him. I will take him over other people just because I want him on my team. But Deebo, amazing, absolutely amazing athlete. When he's healthy, you know, injuries have riddled him since college. Maybe this is 1 year he stays healthy the whole year. Same thing for Justin Jefferson. You know, it's going to be tough with Sam Darnold throwing to you or even Matt Corral, Jaren Hall. But if there's anyone that can use a bad quarterback and make him successful, it's Justin Jefferson. Tight end, I finally got him. Evan Ingram. I absolutely love Evan Ingram. He was the number 2 tight end last year. Trevor Lawrence's perfect option when he has so many different wide receivers going deep. Love me some Evan Ingram. In my flex, Joe Mixon. All right, people forget Joe Mixon was a top 10 fantasy finisher for running backs last year. He's on my team. We'll see how he does with the Texans. I cannot say how he's going to perform, but I like Joe Mixon. Truly, I like him. And a new team spicing it up from Cincinnati. I'll be intrigued to see. Kicker, Jake Elliott. Jake Elliott, one of the top fantasy kickers last year, and this Eagles team is going to be scoring a lot, especially getting in the red zone at least. Defense, grab the Cowboys defense again. I honestly don't get people saying they're going to regress. They're a talented defense who only got better. That's all I got to say for that. Bench mob, here we go. Will Levis, my backup quarterback. Little Will Levis action. He's the biggest boomer bust potential for the whole year with this Tennessee team, which, you know, you got DeAndre Hopkins and you got Calvin Ridley now. You also have Tony Pollard, Taji Spears. they got the weapons. They just have to learn to execute. Some backup running backs I got. You already know we snagged Gus Edwards and Aaron Jones. The Chargers, all right, look at what Harbaugh did with Blake Corum. Look what he did with the Michigan team. They averaged 37 carries per freaking game last year, all right? And that might have even been over the last few years with Harbaugh, okay? So this is a running team. You got Gus Edwards. You got the rookie Kiwani Verdi or something. And you got Gus Edwards, all right? And Gus Edwards, he's a tank. He reminds me of Blake Corum. I love him on my bench. We also got Aaron Jones, all right? He's the Vikings starting running back, all right? Got to ride with Aaron Jones. He has had great seasons with the Packers. If he can stay healthy, there's no reason he should not be successful with the Vikings. Backup wide receivers, we got Keon Coleman, the rookie, joining Josh Allen in Buffalo. I mean, honestly, an amazing quarterback to have as a rookie. And dude was an absolute stud at FSU. All right, one of the top wide receivers coming out of the draft. I'm excited for him. And on my bench, he's actually a starter in my 16-man league, Jackson Smith and Jigba. I just had a good feeling about him coming into this year. I just got a good feeling about him. I think Geno Smith and him kind of got a rhythm down rocking with him. Final bench player, my backup tight end, Cole Kmet. I love Cole Kmet. This is just me personally. I love me a little Cole Kmet. He's fun. He's feisty, and he gets the job done. I mean, what's there not to love, dude? He's going from Justin Fields to Caleb Williams. We don't know what's going to happen with Caleb Williams. He has so many weapons from DJ Moore and Keenan Allen and Cole Kmet to, I mean, he also has Romeo Odunze, so we'll have to see. But those are my fantasy drafts. Exciting stuff coming with all of that. I mean, this whole season is going to be absolutely amazing. Speaking of amazing seasons, did you guys know that every Tuesday, Dana White hosts a contender series where 5 fights take place and he can offer a contract to any of the winners, even the losers? It's happened before. Usually in the past, we've gone through and predicted beforehand, but these past 2 weeks when Dana White's contender series kicked off, I was busy. You know, I didn't really have that much time. I was able to find a little time to get some notes, go over some things, and we are going to drop our official predictions live on the podcast for Dana White's Contender Series, Season 8, Episode 3. I'm excited. All right, I'm excited for this. I haven't really been able to watch it. I don't know if I'm actually going to be watching next week or tomorrow or whenever this airs, because, you know, this podcast could be coming out Tuesday. That's when I might have it air. But Dana White's Contender Series, Week 3, Season 8, takes place, I believe, at 6 p.m. Central Time, so 7 o'clock Eastern for me on Tuesday, August 28th, if my memory is working. 27th, I think it is, actually. But anyways, let's get right on into our fight predictions. Kicking off Dana White's Contender Series, we have a little flyweight matchup between Jack Duffy and Nick Pacini. Jack the Fury Duffy and Nick Pacini. Jack Duffy, 7-0 undefeated. Nick Pacini, 6-0, also undefeated. 5'7 to 5'6 does give Jack an inch in height. He also has 3 inches in reach, 69 inches to 66 for Duffy. Switch stance for Jack Duffy, a little orthodox position for Nick Pacini. This will be both of their debuts on Dana White's Contender Series or in any UFC promotion. Jack Duffy, 28 years old. Of his 7 victories, 2 KOs and 4 submissions. He is from California and last fought and won on January 19th of this year. Currently trains at Fortis MMA, Ryan Spann, Lonzo Menifield, Macy Chason, Muhammad Usman. They all train there, so a very, very notable gym over at Fortis. Seems like a talented kid, definitely has a baby face, 28 years old, seems good. His opponent, Nick Pacini. Nick Pacini, 27 years old, from California. He is a wrestler, has a wrestling background. Of his 6 wins, 5 submissions. Last fought on June 16th, 2024. Pretty good. Jack Duffy was actually supposed to fight 2 separate opponents on this episode of Dana White's Contender Series, and both of those fights fall through, so in steps Nick Pacini. You know, when I look at both these guys, Nick Pacini certainly looks more intense, if you will, more athletic. This one's really hard to get a read on. I mean, honestly, anything could happen with these two, but I'm going to ride with Nick Pacini. I like his last name. Gives me a little Italian, a little mobster background. We'll go with Nick Pacini in this one. Moving in to our second matchup for Dana White's Contender Series. You also need to get Nick Pacini a nickname, honestly. Bantamweight matchup between Malcolm Wellmaker, the Machine, Malcolm the Machine Wellmaker, and Adam Samurai Bromhold. Ooh, what fun names these two have. 7-0 for Malcolm Wellmaker, 13-2 for Adam Bramhald. Both men are 5'10", 71-inch reach to 70-inch reach, so 1-inch for Malcolm Wellmaker. Switch stance for Wellmaker, orthodox for Adam Bramhald. These two seem very good. Malcolm Wellmaker, 30 years old from Georgia. Of those, 6 wins, 3 KOs, and 2 submissions, or 7 wins, sorry. Last fought on January 20th, 2024, coming away with a win. Name like Wellmaker, not surprised. He's from Georgia. Seems like a good kid. Seems talented. You know, I think he's the number 38th ranked bantamweight in the south of the United States, according to Tapeology, but we'll have to see. His opponent, Adam Bramhald, brings much more experience to the fray. The Samurai, 30 years old, from England. He's currently on an 11-fight win streak. Of those 13 wins, 6 KOs and 4 submissions. Of his 2 losses, he's been KO'd once and submitted once, and he last fought on September 9th, 2023. So it has been a while since Adam last fought in any form of promotion. You know, the experience is what really sticks out to me, but Malcolm coming in hungry, 7-0. They're both 30, so I mean, not necessarily the youngest in terms of Dana White's Contender Series fighters. This one's another toss-up. These are all going to be toss-ups, if I'm being honest. Malcolm, you know, I'm going to go with Adam Bramhald. I'm just going to go with him. Just the experience, I think, is what's really going to lean into him. And plus, you know, 11-0 in his last 11 fights. So coming in on a big win streak, we'll see how Adam does. But we're riding with the Samurai over the Machine. Moving into our middle fight for this card, we head to the men's middleweight division as Marco Matuto takes on Mathieu Duclos. Wow. We got some fun names in this one. I absolutely love when we have fun names. Marco Tulio, 11-1. Mathieu Duclos, 6-2. 6'3 to 6', does his Mathieu 3 inches in height. He also has 3 inches in reach, 77 inches to 74. Both men stand the orthodox fighting position. Let's start with the 11-1 Marco Tulio, 29 years old, from Brazil. Of those 11 wins, currently on a little 7-fight win streak, 7 KOs, 1 submission. His one loss is by submission. Yep. That's notable at all. And he last fought on January 27th, so fought earlier this year. Trains at Shootbox Diego Lima with Charles Oliveira. I mean, Alan Osmento, Alves Brenner. I mean, you just got to say Charles Oliveira. You know this guy trains at a very high-level gym. I'm excited. I'm honestly excited to see this guy. He's 11-1. Love that energy. His opponent fighting out of France is Mathieu Duclos, 29 years old. Of those, 6 wins and 2 losses, 5 KOs, and he's been KO'd once and submitted once. He last fought in February on the 10th. You know, when it comes to these Dana White's Contender Series matchups, I don't look too into it. I see that this guy trains at Dana White's at what's-his-face, Charles Oliveira's gym. I'm going to ride with him. He's 11-1, 7-fight win streak, Marco Tulio. And mind you, of those 11 wins, 8 finishes? 8 out of 11 wins by finish. Not too bad in my book. I like him. Heading to our co-main event, if you will, of the evening. We're in the men's featherweight division as Bogdan Grodd takes on Michael Aswell Jr. Bogdan the Unleashed Grodd and Michael the Texas Kid Aswell Jr. What fun nicknames. I love it. Bogdan Grodd, 13-2. Michael Aswell Jr., 9-1. Both men are 5'8", 70-inch reach to 69-inch reach in favor of Bogdan Grodd, and both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Let's start with Michael Aswell Jr., the Texas kid, 9-1 professionally, 23 years old, from Texas. Granted, a little 2-fight win streak, 5 KOs of those wins. 4/21/24 was his last fight, so he fought in April, April 21st, and he's coming from Fury FC. Was an absolute killer over in Fury FC. Welcome to Dana White's Contender Series. Now, his opponent, Bogdan Grodd, I wanted to touch on him because this is his second time on Dana White's Contender Series. He was on last season, Season 7, Episode 1, where he was knocked out in a minute 23 by Tom Nolan. So, coming back, looking for some revenge here. You know, Bogdan Grodd's 28 years old, born in Romania, now lives and trains out of Austria, currently on a little 2-fight win streak after getting knocked out by Tom Nolan last time out. 8 KOs and 3 subs, so dude's an absolute finishing machine. 11 of 13 wins, and of course, you know, of those 2 losses, only one of them, he was finished by Tom Nolan, by KO. So this one's kind of tougher. This one's honestly really tough. I mean, Bogdan, we know he's experienced. We know he's been here before. Michael Aswell Jr., yet to see him on before. But he is 23. I kind of like him that he's the younger fighter. Might be a bit more hungry. Might be a bit more daring. Plus, Bogdan got dropped twice in a minute and 23 seconds and knocked out. So we're going to go with Michael Aswell Jr. Plus, I like the Texas kid as a nickname. Which brings us, ladies and gentlemen, to our final fight, the main event, the fight that's supposed to be the best fight of all on this card, and that is Andrei Puliyev versus Liam Anderson. Andrei Puliyev, 8-2, Liam Anderson, 6-2. 6'4 to 6'3 gives Andrei 1 inch in height. He also has 3 inches in reach, 78 inches to 75. Southpaw stands for the Russian and Orthodox for Liam Anderson. Andrei Puliyev, of course, 26 years old, from Russia. 4-5 win streak for him, so pretty impressive out of his 8 wins. And of those 8 wins, 5 KOs and 2 submissions. Of his 2 losses, he was KO'd once a while ago, so coming in with some momentum. Liam Anderson, 29 years old, from New York, currently on a 4-fight win streak. Of his 6 victories, he has a 100% finish rate of 2 KOs and 4 subs. And of his 2 losses, he's been knocked out once. You know, I love Russians, I find them fun. We're going to go with Andrei Puliyev. There's just not much for me to go off of here. I mean, it's not much for me to go off of. I love finishes on here. I hope all these guys get a finish. I personally feel that Marco Tullio, Michael Aswell, and Andrei Puliyev, I feel like our final 3 fights of the evening are more poised for finishes. I'm honestly feeling more knockouts from Michael and Andrei and a submission for Marco Tullio. As for Adam Bromhart and Nick Pacini, they strike me as decisions. They strike me as close fights. We'll just have to see what happens, because, I mean, goodness me, anything could occur. But Davis Contreras series going down this Tuesday. I'm excited for it. I'll try and get this up before the fight takes place. You could actually listen to these predictions and maybe even place some bets. But as for right now, we're going to be looking at top 10 new things in pop culture, courtesy of Discussing Film. Of course, every episode we look at the 10 new things going on in the pop culture world, with all the new news always being released. So let's check it all out. First off, there's a new teaser available for Sonic 3. That's right, they're making a third Sonic film. Did I see the first 2 Sonic films? I did not see the first 2 Sonic films. I've heard they're good. You know, Sonic, no, live action film. But, you know, a third one where I haven't seen the first 2, not really that interested in, but nonetheless, fascinating. Number 2, Jenna Ortega reveals she actually auditioned to play the role of Shawnee in Denis Villeneuve's Dune film. Of course, Shawnee was played in the role by Zendaya. Imagine that was Jenna Ortega. Now, I would not have blamed Timothée Chalamet for being down bad for her. However, you know, now that we know how good Zendaya played that role, it would have felt kind of odd if Jenna Ortega did. But at the same time, I feel like Jenna Ortega kind of would have bodied that role, so I stand corrected. Number 3, Anthony Mackie recently said on leading Captain America Brave New World as the main lead, he said, "I had to take time and let the scope of what happened set in. You were right, Tom Holland. It is different when you go with your own movie." But good for him. Good for him. You know, Tom Holland, when are they going to make a Falcon movie? And they actually ended up making a Falcon movie, which is pretty freaking funny that, you know, he's Captain America. But number 3, Nobody 2 has begun filming with Timo Dianhanto directing. It is in theaters on August 15th, 2025. Nobody starring, oh my gosh, what's his freaking name? He played the main guy in Here Comes Saul. And this is an awesome action movie about an everyday guy now who, you know, he tells everyone, you know, "I'm just a nobody. I'm just nobody." And he's actually this legendary CIA killer. The first one was super good. It was very entertaining. It left a lot of room open for more adventures with our main lead. I'm excited for that film. Number 5, Adam Sandler was recently featured in a fashion style TikTok video where a guy, you know, goes up to people on the street and interviews them about their fashion. And it was pretty comical to see Adam Sandler in this element. You know, he's this rich millionaire, and here he is dressing very casual on the street being interviewed by this guy. And I can tell that, you know, he didn't necessarily give the best interview questions. I hate to be mean. He seemed very not professional, judging by, you know, some other professional interviewees I've seen. But it was pretty comical to see Adam Sandler freaking being interviewed on the street. Number 5, Josh Gad confirms he is writing the script for Spaceballs 2. Spaceballs, a very popular film from, I assume, the 90s or 80s. Been a while, but Josh Gad, he's a super funny guy, and I would be excited to see him take on the role of writing a sequel, hopefully starring in it. I very much enjoy him. Number 5, are we on? Number 6, whatever it is. Alien Romulus has officially passed $200 million worldwide. This film is an absolute hit. Awesome. Absolutely awesome. I am happy for them. You know, they did a great job. And I'm excited to see this film once it comes out to DVD, because I am not watching this film at the theater. Why? I'd be too scared. The first look at Skylar Gazondo as Jimmy Olsen in James Gunn's Superman has been released, coming out July 11th, 2025. Skylar Gazondo is one of my favorite actors. He was in We're the Millers. I've also seen him in some other roles. He is so funny. You know, it's kind of hard to picture him in a serious role. Actually, was he in We're the Millers? No, he was in the Vacation, like, sequel film with Jason Sudeikis. Yeah, that's... No, not Jason Sudeikis. Andy from The Office. Gosh, I'm getting all my actors mixed up, but he's very interesting. Number six, we'll officially say. Inside Out 2 has now passed $1 billion internationally. Internationally. Not even in the U.S. Internationally. Only 12 other films ever have been able to do that. I don't understand. Who's watching this film? Who's watching this film? Not me. I'm not watching this film. Holy cow. The Crow is officially opened with $4.6 million domestically. The budget was $50 million. That film is an absolute flop. I believe we actually talked about that before, but just insane. Budget's $50 million. In the United States alone, didn't even crack $5 million. That is super embarrassing. That is super bad. Oh my goodness. That's actually kind of funny. I can't lie. That's pretty funny. The movie just didn't look that good. It just didn't look that good. No offense. No offense. Number seven. There just hasn't been that much going on. Harrison Ford explains why he's joining the MCU. I had watched other actors, brilliant actors, have a wonderful time. I'm not a brilliant actor, but I thought I might have a good time. Well, if he had a good time turning into Red Hulk, he is playing one of the most goofiest characters that I've seen. I don't really know what to think of it, but interesting. Number eight, a Field of Dreams remake was being developed at Peacock by the Good Place creator Mike Schur. Chris Pratt agreed to star in the series, but it quickly fell apart after he abruptly dropped out. It would have had a $15 million per episode budget. Field of Dreams, legendary film with Kevin Costner. Let's just leave that there. No need to remake that. But like, why? Why are we remaking that? John Cena explained the plot of Jackpot using Gen Z terms. He said, "Phantom tax, am I right? When my bro Awkwafina realizes she's taken a W, she's got to get herself and get her drip to safety." John, never do that again. John Cena, I absolutely love you. Never do that again. Wow. No comment on that. Number nine, Temuera Morrison and Jacob Batalon have been cast in Jason Momoa and Dave Bautista's buddy cop action movie, The Wrecking Crew. The film follows two estranged half-brothers who work together to unravel the conspiracy behind their father's murder. Jacob, of course, plays Ned in the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, and Temu plays, Boba Fett in the Star Wars universe. So I'm excited for this film. It's looking to be pretty good. The final hint of a... final thing for pop culture today, big shout out to the legendary wrestler Sid. Sid Uday passed away, other known as Psycho Sid, Sid Vicious, in WCW and WWF. He passed away, unfortunately, today at the age of 63. His legendary moments as WWE champion will live on forever. He truly was a menacing wrestler. So may he rest in peace. May his family be, you know, doing okay with everything. You know, it's always tough to lose the loved one. And it's always sad to see the wrestlers get old and, you know, their time comes. Hate to see it, but man, that is just life. So that's your updates in pop culture. Not too much. There's really nothing new really going on personally in the world's pop culture and UFC. But I'll tell you what did go down in the past, and that was UFC Vegas 96. It was an absolute banger of a time. So let's get into it. Let's recap all these fights, because I kid you guys not, this was the best UFC fight night of the entire year of 2024, up to this point, at least. Quickly, before we get into our little recap of UFC Vegas 96, I just want to say my mic has been acting up this entire time. Like, it keeps muting itself. So I've been trying to record this now. Like, by the time you're listening to this, it should be around the 40-minute mark. I'm at an hour and a half of trying to record this podcast. So it has been an absolute struggle. But we are finally here to UFC Vegas 96, which I truly believe is the best fight night of the entire year. So we're going to try and get through this without any technical issues. Let's hope this doesn't take too long. So, first off, let me say 6-5. We go 4-1 on the prelims. We go 4-3. We go 4-4. 3-3 on the main card? I think we've been 3-3 on the main. Or do we go 3-4? What did I do on my main card predictions? There were only 11 fights on this card. One was canceled, sadly. The one between Zygomantas, Romaska, and Nathan Fletcher. I think it was actually moved to the September 7th fight night. But yeah, I only got two main card correct. Did I got four wrong. I went 2-4 on the main card. Ugh, not the best, but 6-5 overall, bringing our yearly total to 214 correct picks, 137 incorrect picks. We're still up. We're still up over time, but let's get right on into things. So first off, we kicked off the night with a bang as the last woman to beat Valentina Shevchenko in kickboxing, Wang Kong, made her MMA debut in the UFC and got a minute knockout of Victoria Leonarda, and it was just beautiful. Caught her with a straight, and she was just out. I mean, I don't even know if she landed a follow-up punch. It was beautiful. It is her fourth of her now six undefeated wins by finish, and her second career knockout. Wang Kong, minus 800 favorite for a reason. Welcome to the UFC. I mean, come on. Come on, do we really want to throw her to the fishes right away? Throw her to the rankings? I don't know. Woman's flyweight. You have a new star, Wang Kong. I'm excited to see what you will bring to the table. As for Victoria Leonardo, yeah. Yeah, Victoria Fury Leonardo did not bring the Fury. She now sits at 1-4 in the UFC. She's been knocked out in all of her losses. This was now her, what is it? Did I write down how many times she'd been knocked out beforehand? This is the fifth time in her career she's been knocked out, yeah. Oh my gosh, of her seven losses, she's been finished six times. Victoria Leonardo, goodbye. Wang Kong, though, getting this card kicked off with a bang. After that, probably tied for lowest point of this card, and mind you, that's why it was on the prelims. Jacqueline Cavalcante and a Cavalcanti took on Josiane Nunez in the women's bantamweight division. And, I mean, shocker to no one, Jacqueline Cavalcante got it done. As the favorite, minus 190, getting the split decision win. 30-27, 29-28, and then Ron McCarthy scoring it completely the other way for Josiane Nunez. Made no sense. Cavalcante outstruck her 91-52, significantly, and for total strikes, dominated her the whole fight. Outstruck her by 14 in round one, 13 in round two, and 12 in round three to get the win. Just impressive stuff all around for Jacqueline Cavalcante. The win streak now, five straight wins from Portugal now. Absolutely love it. 7-1 in the UFC, or 7-1 professionally. 2-0 now in the UFC. I'm excited for her. I'm absolutely excited for her. As for Josiane Nunez, two-fight losing streak, little to be desired. Yeah, get her out of here. Get her out of the UFC. I have seen enough of her. And you know, Jacqueline, you know, I'd rank her at number 15. I'd give her Pan Kianzian right now. I'd throw her into the rankings. Why not? Women's bantamweight, it is so easy to be a breakout star in women's bantamweight. Truly, they only have Kayla Harrison. That's all they have. Maybe Noor Dumont, maybe Carol Rosa, not even. It's pretty rough going, but this wasn't the most entertaining fight yet again. When this is your least entertaining fight, you know you probably had a good night. After that, split decision matchup, Vyacheslav Borshev versus James Lontop. Entertaining fight, great striking matchup. Yet again, another split decision, 29-28 and 30-27 for Vyacheslav Borshev. Aaron Colon scores it 29-28 for James Lontop. But Vyacheslav Borshev, Slava Claus, the minus 250 favorite, walking away with the victory. His first win since May of 2023. This just feels good for him. This feels great for him. And he said he wanted to rematch Chase Hooper. I would not do that, Vyacheslav. Personally, I would not. He works so much better as a striker. As for James Lontop, two-fight losing streak since joining the UFC off of Dana's Contender Series. Tail of this fight, I mean, first round, 26 significant strikes each, dead even. Round two, Vyacheslav Borshev, 37 significant strikes to 25. Round three, James Lontop, 42 significant strikes to 33. It just kind of felt like Vyacheslav won, but the striking was so close. I kind of hope they keep both these guys in the men's lightweight division. This was entertaining, but great win for Vyacheslav Borshev. He moves to 8-4-1. Let's string some together in the men's lightweight division. I actually think I know who his opponent can be, and we're going to talk about him in just a second. After that, we got to our second to last prelim of the night. Zachary Reese took on Jose Medina, and I don't know how to feel about Zach Reese, okay? I don't know how to feel about him, if I'm being honest, okay? And the reason I say that is because, you know, Zachary Reese was sitting at 7-1. All of his fights had ended in round one, and he's taking on a guy in Jose Medina who felt like it was easy to finish him, and he just couldn't. Medina just wouldn't go away, and Reese absolutely didn't destroy him, okay, nonetheless, 30-27, round one was probably a 10-8 if you ask me. Medina only landed four significant strikes, kind of picked up in round two, got outstruck 26-18, around 3, 15 to 10, but Reese lands 5 of 9 takedowns, 6 minutes of control time. He actually got taken down in round 1, shockingly. But Zachary Reese walking away with the win now. 2-1 in the UFC, two-fight win streak, 8-1 professionally. He'll stay. As for Medina, I don't even know how he wound up in this spot, if I'm being honest. But he was a minus 400 favorite for a reason. So very surprised he didn't leave round one. It is telling of his abilities. Good win here. Not an entertaining fight, really. But yet again, it's kind of after this, every single fight delivered in some regard. But, I mean, we predicted so far, so not too bad. The one fight we did not predict correctly was another split decision. This time it went to Francis Marshall, who on short notice stepped in and beat Dennis Bazookja. Entertaining fight. Entertaining fight. In round one, Francis Marshall, 1 of 2 on takedowns, 4 minutes of control time. Took it to the ground immediately, won round one. Round two, dropped him, all right? And he was getting outstruck, too. 30 significant strikes to 23. Ends up getting dropped. I mean, Francis Marshall brought the power. Round three, I don't really think Francis won this one. You know, I know Ben Cartlidge gave every round to him, but Dennis did outstrike him 30 to 28, defended 3 takedowns. Nonetheless, for not being a fight of the night, for just being an average prelim fight, it wasn't necessarily not entertaining. You know, I don't really want to say I was hooked. Like, it was like, oh my gosh, who's going to win this? But it was decent. It was an okay fight. It was a good prelim fight. Good prelim fight. Francis Marshall now sitting at 8-2. He's now 2-2 in the UFC, and this is his first win since December of 2022. Minus 145 favorite means every single favorite won on the prelims. We tried to ride with an underdog in Dennis Bazookja, but he couldn't get it done. I am a little worried for Dennis Bazookja. He's 1-3 in the UFC. You know, I hope they keep him. But, you know, I'd perfectly match up these guys. Vyacheslav Borshev versus Francis Marshall and Dennis Bazookja versus James Law on top. I just feel when you have fights like that on the same card, you can kind of weigh them against each other when they're in the same division. These two fought in the same division. It looked perfect to me. Let's do Francis and Vyacheslav. Another striking masterpiece where you can kind of test Vyacheslav's grappling against someone in Francis Marshall who's not an outstandingly good wrestler. All right. With that, we got into the main card. And, I mean, just from the get-go, I could tell it was going to be an electric evening as we kick things off. Edmund Shahbazyan, Gerald Meerschaert. In round one, I was like, Edmund is so back. Outstrikes Gerald 22-14, looked crisp on the feet, defended a takedown. He was looking good. And then it happened. James Meerschaert in a fight he's clearly losing, all right? Clearly was losing this round heading into what was presumably going to be the third round. Was getting outstruck 26-7. Finally lands a takedown after 5 attempts. And is able to lock it in arm triangle and submits Edmund Shahbazyan at the end of round 2 with under 40 seconds remaining. He truly is the GOAT of submissions. Gerald Meerschaert, 2-fight winning streak now, 2-0 in 2024, both round 2 submissions. He got a little 50K performance. Whilst the most finishes in UFC middleweight history, cashes as a plus 240 underdog. Absolutely lovely. His 29th career submission, his 35th career finish. Absolutely incredible. As for Edmund Shahbazyan now, first time he's been submitted in his career. Very unfortunate for him. Of his 5 losses now, he's been finished in 4 of them. He is currently, you know, 2-2 in his last 4, so I think they'll bring him back for one more. Maybe Edmund Shahbazyan and Zach Reese. That's a perfect fight right there. But Gerald Meerschaert, legend, absolute legend. How about that? 36 years old, just beat a young buck at 26. I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it, man. And dating back, holy cow, dating back all the way until, every single fight Gerald Meerschaert's won in the UFC has been by finish, all right? Majority of them submissions, maybe one or two early on were knockouts, but Gerald Meerschaert, 2-fight winning streak. There's unlimited middleweights for him to fight. If I'm being honest, you could have him fight Zach Reese, but dude, he's an absolute killer. It was a privilege to see. I mean, even though we predicted it incorrectly, I'll happily admit I was wrong and that Gerald Meerschaert's an absolute dog. Second fight on the main card, another 50K performance bonus, and it goes to the now undefeated 17-0, 25-year-old Michael Morales. Holy cow, he's a minus 650 favorite for a reason. I knew he'd get it done. You know, I was confident in his abilities, but the way he did it, knocking Neil Magny down with a spinning back elbow or fist. It was absolutely crazy. Gets immediately to top bat control and just pounds his head into oblivion. 34 significant strikes to 5. Got a knockdown. Defended 2 takedowns from Neil Magny. Neil Magny was having him up against the fence. Morales was like, I ain't going to play that game. Incredible. Michael Morales getting his 12th career knockout. 12 career knockout. Absolutely amazing stuff. He's now sitting at a perfect 5-0 in the UFC and gets his 3rd UFC knockout. Incredible stuff from Michael Morales. It was a privilege to see this. And I mean, welterweight's the best weight class. I just made a TikTok if you want. Check it out, CTR 2002, about how I rave about how good the welterweight division is. And from going unranked, from taking on Jake Matthews, Michael Morales will now be ranked number 12 in the men's welterweight division and will presumably be looking at a top 10 fight. I think him versus number 10, like Jeff Neal, it just writes itself. It's right there for the picking. Just a beautiful win from Michael Morales. And he's got a top 10 opponent, probably looking him right in my face. Neil Magny, you know, he's now been win-loss since 2022. This is actually the only third time Neil Magny's been TKO'd, but I mean, gosh. Like I said, you either beat him and break in or you don't, you know. Beats Jeff Neal, beats Max Griffin, loses to Shafkat. Beats Daniel Rodriguez, loses to Gilbert Burns. Beats Phil Rowe, loses to Ian Gary. Beats Mike Mallett, now loses to Michael Morales. This is the most dominated that I've seen Neil Magny be in the striking department. Michael Morales, an excellent rising prospect. I'm so excited to see where he goes in his career. After that, we got into our 2 Ultimate Fighter finales. You may be asking yourself, Zach, how did we do? We incorrectly predicted both of these. Look, we didn't do too well on our main card predictions. The 2 fights I got right were probably my 2 favorite fighters on the main card. But, yeah. So, your featherweight Ultimate Fighter finale, Myron Santos, gets a disgusting knockout of Con Offley. Oh, my goodness. Myron Santos coming in, minus 200 favorite. He is the favorite for a reason. Gets his 8th career knockout. Incredible. Of 15 wins, 8 knockouts. And it was brutal. Round 2, 90 seconds exactly in, just catches him with a straight, and down goes Khan. A couple follow-up punches. He was out cold. Myron Santos is going to be a killer if he brings that energy. 15-1 record, too. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see guys like this coming in. He looked like he belonged in the rankings, if you will, in the UFC, I should better say, for the featherweight division. A lot of options at featherweight. Dennis Bazookja, I think, normally fights at featherweight, so you could even do Dennis Bazookja versus him. But there's a plethora of unranked featherweights for him to fight. Maybe even a Sean Woodson, who knows. But Myron Santos, great win. Con Offley, 12-3 now. You know, this is a third time. Actually, he's never been finished. This is the first time he was finished. Yikes. It's unfortunate to see that, Con, but dang, Myron Santos was in his bag repping Brazil through and through. 24 years old, 15-1. Yeah, he might actually be an Ultimate Fighter winner who becomes champion. All right, moving on to the middleweight division. This one hurts, okay? Round 2, Ryan Loader, just the grappling of Ryan Loader, in outer worldly. And I think it might just be the fact that Robert Valentine was so anti-grappling this fight. You know, he faced 3 takedown attempts. The scrambles were amazing. But Robert Valentine landed 1 significant strike in the 6 minutes, 49 seconds this fight lasted. I mean, just terrible. 42 significant strikes to 1, 63 total strikes to 5. The reversals, the scrambling was amazing. You know, they might bring back Robert Valentine because of how good his scrambling was in this fight. But Ryan Loader handles business, and he is your middleweight Ultimate Fighter. Congratulations. You know, good win for Ryan Loader. Plus 150 underdog. Now a little 3-fight win streak for him. 5th KO in his career. You know, a little impressive. 8-1. I mean, you know, it's weird when an Ultimate Fighter is 33 years old. You know, I think it's funny. The other one was 24. This one's 33. I don't know who he can potentially fight. I mean, if we're looking at middleweights, Gerald Meerschaert could be a potential first option for him. But Robert Valentine had 2 amazing finishes in round 1 of Daniel's Contender Series. It sucked to see him get finished here. But hey, there's levels to this. And Ryan Loader's grappling was just the weakness of Robert Valentine. So I'd sign both of these guys, but Ryan Loader, your middleweight Ultimate Fighter, I don't know how far he goes. I don't know his ceiling. Like, we have no idea what his striking was, because he honestly just took Valentine down, got him into crucifix, and just TKO'd him. And it wasn't even that Valentine was taking damage. Like, I don't even think he was bleeding, but Mark Smith was kind of just like, bro, I have to stop this fight. Like, I can't just let you get punched repeatedly without fighting back. So, good win. Sucks to see the Viking Robert Valentine lose. It is what it is. With that, we got into our co-main event, and I'm really torn on this co-main event, okay? In one retrospect, number 11th ranked Tabitha Ritchie just beat number 9 ranked Angela Hill, getting it done, okay? People watching, I feel like everyone kind of knew the fight was going to be scored for Tabitha Ritchie, but truly felt like Angela Hill won, and this is just a recurring thing in Angela Hill's career. Tabitha Ritchie, 2 takedowns in round 2 and 1 takedown in round 3 is probably what sealed it for her. But striking-wise, 112 significant strikes, 101. Angela Hill had more. Both women landed exactly 140 total strikes. Tabitha Ritchie, 3 of 4 in takedowns, 5 minutes, 4 seconds control time. Round 1, Tabitha outstruck her 27-21. Despite landing 2 takedowns in round 2, got outstruck 44-35. Angela Hill, I thought she won round number 3, 47-39 significant strikes. But, you know, so it all came down kind of to round 2, and they scored the takedowns more so over the striking. So Tabitha Ritchie getting it done. Good win for Tabitha. She improves to 11-2. It's now sitting at 5-2 in the UFC. 2-fight winning streak now. They've both been very close. I will say that all of her fights have been necessarily pretty close, except the 2 that have ended by finish. Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know. Tabitha Ritchie, good win for her. Angela Hill, you will forever be screwed by bad decisions. I point back to the Amanda Lemos fight. I thought she won that. Michelle Watson Gomez fight, Claudia Gadella fight, Tisha Pennington fight. I honestly feel like Angela Hill wins so many more fights that the judges actually give her credit for, but good win for her nonetheless. And yeah, they were both favorites, so it didn't even matter. Tabitha Ritchie entering the top 10. Number 7, Amanda Ribas is there. I like that fight. Gavin Duher versus Marina Rodriguez. Lots of options. Amanda Lemos, even. So many options for her. Angela Hill, like I said, even more options for her. Jillian Robertson is there. Yasmin Lucindo. How about a little... Oh, wait. Wang Kong fights at flyweight. This is woman's strawweight, so... No Wang Kong here. But it was entertaining, like I said. For being a woman's co-main event on Apex Card, I wasn't not hooked. I was hooked, it was entertaining, and I enjoyed myself. And with that, we got to the main event, and up to this point, we had maybe 2 mediocre fights, Cavalcante Nunez, Reese, and Medina, but nothing where it was like, this is bad. We had killer knockout from Wang Kong, killer knockout from Khan, from Myron Santos, Michael Morales moving to 17-0 as a 25-year-old with a TKO of Neil Magny, submissions, grappling just on display from Jill Meerschaert and Ryan Loader, and 2 Ultimate Fighter winners. Tabitha Ritchie and Angela Hill delivered the best woman's fight of the night, I mean, by far, and then we get to the main event, and when I'm going to talk about fight of the nights of the year, as far as Apex events go, as far as a rising contender taking the freaking reins and bringing his name into the division, yeah, the number 12 ranked Kyle Barallo just beat the number 5 ranked Jared Cannonier in a fight of the night, which is in running for fight of the year. It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. This was a joy to watch. I very much enjoyed myself watching this. Totals from the fight, 153 significant strikes to 83 in favor of Kyle Barallo. Kyle goes 0 of 1 on takedowns. He attempted 1 takedown. And as far as clinch works goes, a minute 59 of clinch work. There's hardly any clinch work in this one. This was striking through and through. Kyle Barallo, 1 round 1, looked crisp, okay? Cannonier comes back round 2, outstrikes him 26-21, wins it. Round 3, though, somewhat closer, gave it to Barallo. It was close, but Barallo, when we turn in terms of striking percentage, 63% to 25% for land rate, yet they threw the exact same amount of strikes at 58. Yeah, Kyle took that. Round 4, I scored it for Kyle. Like I said, his striking percentage was just on point, 56% to Jared Cannonier's 50%, outstruck him by 11. And then round 5, just the icing on the cake, a 10-8 round, everyone pretty much had it 10-8. Just about damn near knocked Cannonier out cold. If he had not followed up with punches, he had just landed a walk away, it would have been one of the nastiest knockouts of the year. But somehow, this always happens with Jared Cannonier, when you knock him down and you land follow-up punches, it re-wakes him up. 50 significant strikes to 11. Kyle Barallo, incredible. The final judges' scorecards, 49-45, 49-45, and 48-46. Incredible win for Kyle Barallo. Kyle Barallo now 17-1. He is a beautiful 6-0 in the UFC. And in his last 4 fights, 2 performance bonuses and a fight of the night. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. The winning streak, I believe, is at 16 fights now. I think it's at 16 fights, or is it at 15? It's at 16 or 15. He is just incredible. He's an absolute specimen. 31 years old, representing the Fight Nerds. And now, in the year of 2024, You got Nazardine Imavov, you got Kyle Barallo, you got Brendan Allen. All of these guys are making a jump. As much as we haven't really like seen it coming, there's been a changing of the guard at men's middleweight, and I'm here for it, man. I'm absolutely here for it. As for Cannonier, it's kind of sad. You know, they were talking about a title rematch with wins over Sean Strickland and Marvin Vettori. He's now lost twice in 2024. Now, mind you, entertaining fights, Nazardine Imavov and Kyle Barallo. He's been outstruck by the younger, hungrier fighter in Cannonier. You've probably been sent to gatekeeper land. By the time the rankings come out, Kyle Barallo will be ranked number 5 in the world. Absolutely incredible. They've already been talking about what could be next for him. I would love a fight against the winner of Nazardine Imavov and Brendan Allen, but at the same time, I feel like they should get a title shot. I would really love to see Whitaker and Strickland, but you know, if we can get Kyle Barallo versus Sean Strickland, that'd be cool. Marvin Vettori was even calling out Kyle Barallo. I mean, there's a lot going on. But great work from Kyle Barallo. Truly incredible. Cannonier, he'll probably drop down to the number 6 spot in the rankings, maybe 7, depending if they bump Brendan Allen up. People were mentioning a Paulo Costa fight. They were even saying winner of Michelle Pereira and Anthony Hernandez. I think those are both your options. Winner of Michelle Pereira and Anthony Hernandez. They might even do the winner of Roman Dolidze and Kevin Holland when that takes place, so. A lot of options, but this fight night was absolutely beautiful. When I give a thumbs up or thumbs down to every fight, top to bottom, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up. I mean, out of our 11 fights, only 2 somewhat duds. Just a beautiful night. Beautiful night of fights. And when we're going to be doing our end of the year review, you're going to be hearing this fight night be brought up again. It's the best one so far. Best one so far as we enter the final 4 months, the final quarter of the year, or whatever it is. Actually, it would be the final third of the year, I think it is. But anyways, it is what it is. So yeah, that's all we got for today's episode, ladies and gentlemen. We're nearing plus 100 units for correct picks, all right? We're going to get there. I'm very confident. And Kyle Barallo, it has been just so fun picking him every single time and watching his rise to the top. Exciting stuff. We got 2 more episodes coming at you this week. Of course, as I mentioned before, go check out episode 114 with my girlfriend, Lexi Morley. It's absolutely such a blast, the entire episode. We got the return of someone who's been on 3 times before this week. And we also got a little bonus episode. Even though there's no UFC event, we can find a bunch of stuff to talk about for an hour on the Surprise Jab Podcast. Guys, as always, thank you so much for listening. Truly, I appreciate it. Follow me on all the socials. Link is in the bio. And just send a DM out. You know, you'd be surprised at how often I'll respond. And hey, maybe you could even get a spot here on the podcast. We're always looking for some surprise guests. All right. Thank you all so much. And I'll make sure to catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.